You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Hope you guys are doing great, and thanks so much for all of you for being here and being a part of the Paranormal Portal family. So welcome, and a special thank you to all of you who have been spreading the word about the portal. We're getting lots of new listeners and lots of new people picking up the show, and it's been an amazing honor. So thank you all for spreading that word and making us known far and wide. If you have a story of your very own, something paranormal happened to you and you'd love to share it and wouldn't mind being a guest on the show, please email us at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com and let us know. And it'd be great to have you on. And it's definitely my favorite part of these shows is to get a chance to listen to the experiences so many people have had and have a chance to talk to you about them. So I'd love to hear from you. So again, paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. We got a great show lined up for you guys today. A special guest is a lifelong paranormal enthusiast and a retired paranormal researcher and the author of two amazing books, The Last Call on the Potomac and the newest book, Project Rabbit Hole. I'd like to welcome author Al Tias to the show and get into an amazing discussion with Al. So I hope you're ready because we're going in. And welcome to the show, Al.
Thanks, Brent. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no worries, man. I appreciate it. It's good to have you here. And thanks for taking the time to make a visit on the portal. I have to tell you that I love the amount of thought and research that you've put into this subject because I think that it's important to try to understand the phenomena as much as we can. And it seems in my familiarity with your work, my limited familiarity, but what I've read, I'm absolutely thrilled with your direction and the way you're going with this.
Thanks. I've been hearing a lot about that when people who read it, because like I always tell them, you know, it's a ride, and once you pick it up, people tell me it's really hard to put it down, and I get excited when people read it and we discuss it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, and there's so much to discuss in the paranormal, and you know, I've kind of made a career out of it myself with the paranormal portal because, you know, and here's the thing, I think that the paranormal, and I said it many times on the show, but I think the paranormal is the breadcrumbs. It's the breadcrumbs to demonstrate a really incredibly fluid and dynamic reality, and that, You know, I think traditionally speaking, we think of reality as this rigid box that we live in. But I think that the paranormal is kind of like these constant reminders that actually it's much more fluid and much more dynamic than we've been led to believe.
Oh, absolutely. Even in my experience, whenever you kind of reach that point where it's like, yeah, you know, this is all, you know, folklore, fairy tales, then something really crazy happens and you just go like, no, it's not all folklore and fairy tales, because this stuff is still happening today. And then you start to ask yourself, well, where are we going with this now? Because it's 2020, and really we're not any closer to figuring this stuff out than the ancient Greeks were, you know, regardless of what type of, you know, techie equipment we have now or whatever we do or how things have changed. We still don't know what these things are. And everything is still theoretical. There were no experts. And we really can't prove much of anything, regardless of what people say. And what I say in the beginning of the book, it's kind of like the carrot and the stick and the carrot to kind of like keep us going with it. Mm-hmm. But we're not really the ones being led around. We're actually kind of like the bait. And I kind of use that because of the way that we are so affected by this stuff still nowadays. And my theory of it is controversial, because what I say is 2,000 years from now, we're going to be just as clueless about this stuff as we are now. Mm. We're never going to get the answers. We're never going to find the solutions. And we're never going to figure it out, because whatever this is, all this stuff, they always stay one step ahead of us with everything. And we're never going to get there with it. And a lot of people kind of like, oh, no, we'll find the right thing. We'll find the right. No, I'm convinced at this point that they are a lot smarter than we are. And we're never going to find what exactly it is. But we're always going to find a little bit of evidence with it just to keep us kind of going with it.
That's an interesting take. You're right. I'm certainly hopeful that someday we'll, you know, because I think that when we, if there's a possibility to solve the paranormal, it will also be to solve our existence. And I think it, you know, cause I think it goes hand in hand, what we are and what this paranormal stuff is. It is at least somehow interrelated, and in more so, you know, than we're the mice and someone's got the cheese and they keep dangling for us. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I don't know. But I'm sure hopeful that we'll dial this in at least a little more, because I think that the benefits, of course, I think would be incredible, in that it would remove some of those existential questions that have been plaguing us and making us live in doubt. And perhaps if we could crack some of this, it could at least let us, you know, move forward with our thinking rather than mulling the same existential questions over and over and over. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
But,
and I think that's where the problem really aligns with that. Like I said, is that we just don't know. Like, you just take a case in point is poltergeists. Mm-hmm. We still have the exact same idea, for the most part, about poltergeists revolving around some prepubescent female or a teenager or something like that. And that's not even concrete. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of poltergeist cases where there are no children involved at all. Uh-huh. You know, but somehow these two things have fallen together like this to kind of like keep it going, when reality is we probably have to dump that theory out, you know. And
sure,
I kind of look at it this way, is a lot of our theories are becoming more and more antiquated with the modern age, and we have to kind of ask ourselves, is this something that's really still usable, or do we need to kind of dump this on and start over again? And does it matter?
That's a great question, and that's a great point too. And I agree. I've often been skeptical of that explanation, not because I don't think there's any merit to people manifesting a situation. I think that we are incredible manifestors, but I don't think it's just you know, a one size or one, yeah, one size fits all kind of thing. I think that there's an incredibly diverse, probably, number of things that could cause quote unquote poltergeist activity. You know, I think that, you know, the other part of it, I think that the problem is that, do we even really know how to correctly identify what is a poltergeist versus what isn't? I mean, a lot of times if stuff moves and there's a profound activity, well, it's a poltergeist. Well, you know, are we sure? I mean, could it, what if it could be a djinn, or what if it could be an elemental, or what if it could be, you know, any number of things? And I think that we probably don't have a unifying terminology that correctly identifies the phenomena yet.
Exactly. And what I use in my book, I use the euphemism, our elusive friends. And then I try to kind of pinpoint how they all kind of work like that, because I see it as all this stuff, whether it's quote-unquote aliens, or if it's djinn, or ghosts, or poltergeists, or demons, or whatever it is, they're all kind of on the branches on the same tree.
Right.
And that's kind of how I look at it with it. And for years, I've been looking at the patterns that come with these things. And once I started to really sit down and write Project Rabbit Hole, those patterns became so clear to me, where I was kind of like, this is more of this than it is of this, mm-hmm. you know? And I started to really look at that. And one of the things that I've realized is that our culture right now, and really, as you would probably agree with this, is that in a lot of ways, paranormal has become almost synonymous with ghosts.
Yes.
Like when somebody calls themselves a paranormal investigator, really what they're doing is they're looking for ghosts.
Yeah.
And that's all they're doing. I'm reminded a while back, I saw this really, really funny meme, and it was one of those Victorian-style memes, and it was this woman, and she was kind of like playing with some sort of a divination tool, and behind her was this huge, weird, Lovecraftian looking entity, and it said something like, I'm from the 17th dimension, I will answer any question you have on any secrets of the universe. And she has her back to it, and she's just going, shh, I'm looking for ghosts. You know, and yeah. I just think about that, and that really coined a lot of what encompassed a lot of what I do here. And I even argue with people a lot of times now that are going to places and they're saying like, oh, I got activity, it's a ghost. And I go like, well, I kind of try to challenge them, like, well, how do you know it's mm-hmm. a ghost and it's not something else?
Good point.
You know, and a lot of times they don't think about that. They just automatically assume that if there's something that's haunting an environment, that it's automatically a ghost. And in my experience, both as a paranormal investigator and as a researcher, a lot of times, it's not the dysfunctional residual spirit of a dead person, or whatever's kind of left over from somebody with mm-hmm. the unfinished business, or whatever we define as a ghost. It's very possibly something else. And that something else can be dangerous.
Yeah.
And I try to warn people about that. And that's one of the parts to Project Rabbit Hole. I just want people to kind of expand their mind. Like, I noticed, like, with new paranormal investigators, it's just so funny, because when they go on their first few ghost hunts or cases or whatever like that, and you would say to them, yeah, there's a house over there, and supposedly it has three ghosts in it. Yeah, are you looking to going there? And it's like, yeah, I'm so excited about it. And if I would say something like, all right, see that house over there? There's a Muslim family there, and they claim they have two djinn in there, and one's trying to possess their kid. Mm-hmm. Are you ready to go in? And there'll be a lot more hesitation involved in that. And, you know, the world is changing. You know, the dynamics are changing. The cultures are changing. And, you know, things are changing with this stuff. And if I mention anything other than a ghost, people just seem to lose interest, unless you have that small kind of like quartered off percentage of people that claim that it's a demon.
Yeah.
And then it kind of ends from there. And I'm kind of like, no, it's, you can't just jump from this to this, you know, and you have to look at the big picture of these things. So what I did in Project Rabbit Hole is I kind of categorized a bunch of different types of beings that I've encountered that somebody may encounter. And I give a very thorough history of why nowadays people believe that it's a ghost based on the time, the culture, and basically the mood of the situation like that. Well, it was not like this 100 years ago. It was not like this 1,000 years ago. The belief, the activity was the same. The belief in what it was quite different. Like right now, if somebody goes to a haunted house, they automatically think it's a ghost. While if it was in the Middle East, they would say, no, it's a djinn.
Sure.
And if it was in Japan, they would probably have a whole different idea of what it was, just like in Mexico would be. And if it was 300 or 400 years ago, it would have a whole different mentality about what it is, because our relationship with hauntings has evolved.
Sure.
And people don't quite understand that. Like, it's kind of funny, because if you look at spirit communication, for example, 2,000 years ago, if a person who would most likely be a priest would make contact with a spirit, they would most likely think it was a god or sent by a god. And then 100 years ago, it's a drunk guy who died in a basement who somehow has information about the spirit world. And they're holding a seance to try to contact him. So it's changed a lot with the times and everything, but the method has kind of stayed the same with it. And then you have nowadays, you have people who are doing the same thing, but they claim they're contacting interdimensional beings from other planets through channeling something like that.
Right.
And it's always kind of changing like that. And my focus on Project Rabbit Hole is to look at these patterns with it all like that and just kind of say, like, you know, when you go into a haunted place or when you hear somebody talk about something or whatever it is, it may not be what you think it is, what that person living with that thing thinks it is,
right,
or anything like that. And we're evolving again with the internet, globalism, changes in culture, immigration, various things like that. And we have to kind of look at that as well.
Yeah. Now, would you say that, and I appreciate what you're saying in terms of, do you know what you're dealing with? Because you're right. So case in point, let's say, for instance, somebody's in their home and suddenly the house starts rumbling. Well, it's an earthquake. Well, are you sure? Because, you know, and with a little investigation, you might find out, well, there was a gas main leak and it blew up and that shook your house, or there was a, you know, a sonic boom or something above your house that shook the house, or there could be any number of things that are creating the same type of phenomena. But we often jump towards whatever our preconceived notion of it is rather than really investigating that. And I agree that I think that that's, it's far too easy to do, and maybe in terms of the paranormal, we're never really going to know for sure, but perhaps, you know, we can start to eliminate some options. And the other thing is, do you think that a lot of these things are just the same thing? Because again, we're dealing with so for instance in Australia they have the Yowie, in China they have the Yeren, and in the U.S. we have Sasquatch, Bigfoot, we have wild men, we have grass men, we have skunk apes. And granted, you know, there may be some subtle variations, but generally there's the same kind of thing, and it's just these regional understandings have created these new names for them. So whereas, you know, people that are Islamic or study Islam are going to see jinns, Christians may see demons, you know, other people may see ghosts or, you know, whatever. And so a lot of this, I think, is filtered through our culture, you know, and how we identify these things.
Well, that's one of the things that I talk about with it. And my whole feeling about this is a lot of this stuff, because we only go by what we believe it is, mm-hmm. and don't know the big picture of this stuff is it's dangerous.
Right.
It can be really bad for people. And I talk about that in the book about why I left mm-hmm. and how I started getting more and more sicker as I was going on investigations, and how it was starting to affect my psyche, and how, you know, I was getting like the bad dreams and the poor health and all these different things that just seemed to be happening. And then I started seeing it happening with other people, like in my, whether it was in my group or other paranormal investigators, their marriages would fall apart.
Sure.
They would start to be alienated from their kids. They would come home and their pets wouldn't recognize them. Many times I've heard people say, I came home and my dog attacked me.
Oh, geez.
You know, things like that happen. Or I had a freak accident and I'm in the hospital right now. And I've had several friends of mine, because I left in 2006.
Okay.
So, and I started in 1999, around 1999, 2000. So I've been around for a while, you know, and mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of people that I've known who have kind of gotten really down into the rabbit hole, and they've died. They've actually have died.
Oh, wow.
You know, including the man that took over my group when I left my own group, when I just felt like I couldn't handle it anymore, and I felt really bad because I kind of gave him a crash course training session, and I taught him about, you know, the non-human element of this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I just kind of just came up, gave him a crash course. I was kind of like, okay, now you're ready to go. You know, because I'm not going on any of them.
Right.
And, you know, he did, I don't go into like the details of it, but I got a phone call that he died, you know, when he was in only in his early 40s.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And that's thanks. It started to really make me think about things. And it wasn't even just that. That was kind of like the big clincher with it. But I have seen and experienced and heard things that have been so non-friendly, I guess you can say, that I'm getting more and more convinced that these things are not our friends. And I say that a lot of times. I don't want to sound like one of those doomsday people. Uh-huh. I really don't, but I just feel like we really have very little to gain from them, and they have a very big trickster element to them.
Oh, okay.
And that's what we have to be careful of, because I go over that over and over again, how they seem to rope us in with something that influences our curiosity mm-hmm. just enough so we start to really trust them. And then once we give our trust to them, they pull the rug out from under us. You know, sure. For example, they'll give a prophecy. And the prophecy will be a minor, very, very minor thing. It'll come true. Then another prophecy will come true. Then they give a big prophecy. And now the prophet or so has a following. And then it completely falls apart and the prophet loses all credibility.
Oh, sure.
That has happened so many times with people involved with the spirits and that stuff. And how many mediums and various people end up becoming penniless, alcoholics, drug addicts, sick, and end up having really miserable lives. If you look at like the Fox sisters and how they basically became a couple of alcoholics at the end of their lives, and how many people like rose to fame with this stuff and then they completely decline,
right?
For something that happens with it. And I just feel like they lead us on for quite some time, and then something always happens, and then whoever it is really totally lose credibility and kind of fall from grace, so to speak. And it happens in all the different ones. It happens with paranormal investigators. It happens with psychics. It happens with mediums. It happens with channelers. It happens with alien people who claim to encounter aliens. It happens with all that stuff. And that's why I just feel like these things are not meant to be trusted. And I think they have a habit of using us for whatever reason. And then once they're done with us, they kind of like throw us back into the lake, so to speak.
Sure.
Yeah. And I've seen that a lot of times, both in my research and in my personal life with things. And that's why that's one of the reasons why I left, and B, that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book, because for the longest time I've been thinking about this kind of stuff and how many times I've had people call me and tell me that something followed them home in an investigation, and how many times people will say, like, my kids are acting really strange now since I've been to this haunted place, or I've have something going on now or something, and so many different times like that. And I'm kind of trained in a lot of different things. Like, I know how to do, like, exorcism through, like, the Cajun French methods, like hoodoo and things like that, and other various ways. And I try to help them with these things. And a lot of times I've kind of helped them get whatever is on them off them, and then a week later they go running right back to that haunted place again.
Oh, you know,
I'm kind of like,
sure.
What is? It's almost like a drug addict running back into, like, the, you know, the meth lab or something like that. You know, maybe it's a bad analogy, but
right.
I just think that I mean, I don't want to say, like, for everybody to be totally discouraged, but I'm just kind of saying, like, know what you're up against, and know that this stuff is potentially dangerous. And I'm not saying that from a Judeo-Christian point of view or even a religious point of view. I'm saying it from my own experience.
Yeah. And you're right. I think that a lot of people treat it like the newest thrill or the latest reality show. It's like, well, everybody should be running through abandoned buildings, calling on spirits and stuff. And really, no, it's incredibly dangerous. And you're right. The ramifications are huge. Okay, everybody. I think it's time we got to take a break. So don't go away. And we'll be right back with more of the Paranormal Portal podcast in just a couple minutes. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here, the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Everybody, and we're back at it here on the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Buckle up, we're going in.
Well, one of the things about it is that, like I said, you know, I have been involved in this since the 90s, and there was a time when I first started doing this, there were like maybe five or six groups probably in the entire country. Mm-hmm. There were very, very few groups because the internet was just starting to get really popular, and there were very few groups with it. And then once the reality shows started coming out,
yeah,
it just exploded.
Sure, it did.
It just really exploded all over the place with it. And then anybody who purchases an EMF meter and can operate a website think that they can, you know, investigate this kind of stuff and everything, and all these groups that are popping up. And what I always say is that everybody wants to be a paranormal investigator. I know that because when I had a group, I would get so many applicants for people that would want to do it. Yeah. And I would try some of them out, and after the first investigation, I would never hear from them again. And
yeah.
And I thought about two things. One is that, you know, I'm a terrible leader, you know, yeah. And two, is that they got bored. They didn't want to sit in a basement for 3 hours, or they didn't want to, you know, do quiet time or do EMF checks or, you know, speak quiet for the EVPs or whatever it was. And it's not what they expected with it at all like that. But then the ones that stick with it have something happen that can be so compelling that they kind of reach an existential crisis. And when that happens and they truly have a bona fide experience, they have a choice. Either they leave and just kind of say, like, I can't deal with this, and they go, and a lot of them do that.
Sure.
But other ones stick around, and when they stick around, they know there's something in us that says, I can't go back to the way it was.
Yeah.
You know, and it becomes completely different with it, and I hope that people end up having that revelation that comes with that, with this kind of stuff with it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's very true. I don't think most people understand what it is they're doing, because they watch a television show and they see, well, you just go in there and you point the EMF meter around and you find out where it blinks, and then you aim a camera and you catch the apparition, and, you know, I mean, it's all edited for fun, and so people walk away with these incredible expectations of it. And you're right, some of it is, you know, a good friend of mine, Dan Pruitt, has a group. It's called Red Eyes and Dead Batteries. It's like that's the name of his paranormal group, and he's a great investigator, a great friend, and I've investigated with them, but, you know, mm-hmm. it's like most of paranormal investigating is just a lot of waiting and sitting around. So you're right, there's those people that are going to be dismayed, and then there's the other side of it, that if you do get some activity, it suddenly becomes real. And when it becomes real, that's when, you know, the rubber hits the road, and when you find out just how sincerely awesome and terrifying this can be.
And for me, you know, it's kind of funny, because when I was not investigating was when, you know, people always say, like, I want to see a ghost or I want to see a spirit. And I saw three of them in my life that I would consider bona fide. And yet I went over to over 100 haunted sites and I never saw anything.
Wow.
You know, yeah. I've had experiences. I've had EVP. I've had objects move around. I've had, you know, feelings of being touched and all these other things like that, but actually to see something with my eyes like that, like a ghost,
right,
or something, I've never seen seen anything that I can consider to be like truly a paranormal experience like that. And I started asking myself why, and the answer that I have is because they know you're looking for them.
Right.
You see, if they don't know you're looking for them, that's when they're going to show up.
Mm.
You know, that's why, you know, like you have like a woman in the kitchen washing the dishes, and she turns around and there's a disembodied spirit there with no head or something, you know, because she's just like washing her dishes,
yeah.
You know? And that's the experience I have with it, is if you're looking for them, they're not going to come.
But don't you think they, okay.
All my experiences.
Okay. I was going to say, but don't you think they always know that you're looking for them? Because I believe that they're telepathic. Like they can, since they're, I believe largely energy based, that they can perceive our thoughts, because I believe that our thoughts are projected outside of our physical shells and into the world around us. And don't you think that they always know anyway?
No. Well, they might, but they know when we're not looking for them either, because, you know, like in my my experience, the first one I saw, I was 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't looking for anything. I was in an amusement park.
Oh.
You know, and I write about that in the and the introduction to my book, that it was the very first one that I believe I saw,
mm-hmm.
and that was what kind of set the ball rolling with it. And it was kind of like the 7 year thing. I saw one when I was 7, one when I was 14, and one when I was 21. And the one I saw when I was 21 wasn't a ghost. It was what you would call either a doppelganger or a wraith, because it was an apparition of my grandfather when he was still alive, but he was dying in the hospital from cancer.
Oh.
And I saw him on my porch. So, and I know, looking back now, I definitely know that it was him. And my family have had a lot of experiences with him and my grandmother since they both died. And so, no, I was home. I was like in the pool swimming after working a night shift at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And it was like a very hot summer. And I was in the pool, and when I swam to the other end, I looked over, and there was this man standing on the porch staring at me. Wow. You know? And I thought it was my my stepfather, and the next morning I confronted him, and my stepfather was never got out of bed. Oh. So I thought to myself, like, well, who was the creep that was staring at me, you know? And we had a dog at the time, and if a twig snapped, that dog would go nuts. So sure. There's no way anybody could be on that porch and not have the dog go crazy with it. So, and then shortly after this, my grandfather died, and that's when I kind of had an idea that sometimes they manifest before they die, when the soul goes in and out and things like that.
Right.
And it's kind of like, in a sense, putting two and two together, but remembering the jeans and the t-shirt, and I didn't see his face because it was kind of behind the potted plant that was hanging. But the build and all that stuff, looking back, it's like, yeah, I am very positive that that was my grandfather.
Okay.
He died. So, no, I didn't expect it at all.
Yeah.
Like that. So, sure. And there have been even times now where I would, like, you know, not expect it. You know, when I first started when I first moved down to where I work in the D.C. area, I saw one, you know, but it was a shadow being. And I just had the working on a vacant wing in a building, you know. So they, you know, they catch you off guard with this stuff. And I just think if you're looking for them, you're not going to find them. But if you're just kind of like minding your own business or whatever and they want to show up, that's when they're going to do it.
Now, let me ask you about that experience in the swimming pool. You said it was a doppelganger, but what?
Yeah.
Now, it was your stepdad? Is that who it was?
My grandfather.
Grandfather. Okay, so he's in the hospital. And did he end up ever leaving the hospital, or was that
no?
Him? Okay, so
that was it. He died about 3 weeks later, or something like that.
Okay, so. I mean, doesn't it make sense that he might have been already releasing from his body as part of his transition and could have appeared?
Yeah. But since he was still alive, it would fall under either a doppelganger or a wraith or something like that as a spirit
or
a person that's still alive. Because a ghost, so to speak, is when it leaves the body and the body's dead. And it's kind of like the certain elements of a person that are stuck here earthbound rather than something that's crossed over and kind of comes back as a helper spirit or whatever it is like that. And that's why a lot of people don't like it when I say this, but I consider ghosts to be kind of dysfunctional parasites because if you look at them, a lot of the ones that die are people that weren't the nicest people in life.
Right.
You know, and my city here, right, in Alexandria, in the old section, we have a lot of alleged ghosts that are like prostitutes or soldiers or just various types of people like that who've lost their limbs or, you know, just various types of people who died young in a way or something like that. It's some of it's tragic like that when you have like a soldier that was killed somebody that was murdered. But we also have like, you know, the speakeasy people, the ones that were the murderers and the drug addicts. And a lot of like, you hear stories about like a lot of that too. Like basically people that were involved in some pretty, pretty bad things.
Sure.
Like
yeah.
That. And they get kind of stuck here probably because they have some unfinished business to work out, or their psyche was just so messed up when they were alive that they just can't manifest to cross over, and they're really kind of going crazy because they're stuck in this plane. They don't know why, and they can't figure things out, and they don't know what's going on, and then they're in this really agitated state. And then comes Becky with an EMF meter. Is anybody here? Like, hello? Like, oh, my God, is there a ghost in here? You know? So it's kind of like the way the paranormal investigator works with this. It's kind of like, you know, can you give us a sign? And the last thing this thing wants to do is like do a trick for Becky,
right,
or me or anybody else. Like, right, that it's like, okay, I gave you a sign and knocked on the wall. Now what?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're going to help me. You're going to help me cross over. Are you going to like do this? You're going to do that. I gave you the sign. Now what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or they look at Becky coming in with the EMF beat and they're like, this is a joke. I'm not giving her a sign or anything,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of think of the point of view of the spirit. When I was up the street from me is a strip mall, and there used to be years ago there was a VHS store there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to that VHS store one time, and I was just like browsing some videos, and I felt somebody very firmly grab the shirt, my shirt tail, and yank it.
Oh.
So I just figured there's a friend of mine there or something. So I turned around immediately, and there was nobody there, and there was, like, nobody anywhere around me.
Wow.
And I was kind of startled by that, and I didn't know what the heck was going on with it. And this was a little bit before I started, like, getting involved in actual paranormal investigating. And then I found out that the place next to it is a nightclub where a guy was drunk and he died behind the dumpster from hypothermia.
Oh my God.
And they've been having things happen like that for years.
Sure. Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, this happens all the time. And they gave the guy a name and all this kind of stuff and everything like that. And,
mm-hmm,
and all this kind of stuff like that. And they were like, yeah, you know, he's around here, you know, all the time like that. But they also have this mentality, like they don't want people going in there to kind of mess with it either. They kind of feel like, you know, he's got his own business to do, and that's that, and we're kind of comfortable with them, so it's okay,
wow,
you know? Yeah. So, and I feel like, you know, well, you know, he's not hurting anybody, and they're okay with it, then
sure,
you don't need anybody to go in and investigate or poke and prong or, yeah, try to make them do tricks or anything like that, you know?
I think you're absolutely right, and that's something I brought up on the show many times, mm-hmm, is that I think that, you know, it's probably a lot of these, if they are indeed human spirits, a lot of them obviously were people, and wherever they are is where they feel, for whatever reason, they feel that that's the most comfortable place for them. And how offensive would it be to have someone come into your living room and say, okay, now move this book. Okay, now vacuum. Okay, I want you to pick up those pillows.
Yep.
You know, how degrading and insulting would that be? So, you know, that it's important, if you're going to investigate, to do so as respectfully as possible.
Well, for me, too, in 2005, I got hit by a car crossing an intersection. And when I got hit, the car turned and instantly broke my right leg.
Oh, geez.
And I went up and over the hood, and I landed face first in the intersection. And this was like around 5 o'clock in the morning. It was before the sun was even up, right around 5:30, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I laid there and I thought to myself, like, this is it, I'm going to die. And for just a split second, I think I left my body.
Oh, wow.
Like, I just remember, like, being underneath another car and seeing everything there like that. And it's hard to say because there's when you get something like that happen, the trauma comes up and your ears get blocked and you lose your sight.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're yelling, you don't know what exactly if you're yelling or not because everything is muffled up.
Right.
And for what felt like an eternity, I just said, like, I'm going to die here. The next car is going to run me over, and I'm gonna die here like that. And it was a long recovery for me. You know, they had to put my leg back together, and it was a lot of things with it and everything. But then, I actually, as I was recuperating, I thought to myself, like, do I want to be, oh, yeah, there's a ghost on Pickett Street. He was walking to the metro, and he got hit.
Yeah.
You know, some say at night, like, you can feel him walking across the street.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm, maybe he'll, like, ring a bell or something, you know, or something crazy like that. And
sure,
and it just gave me that realization, like, oh, my God, what are we doing to these poor things? Mm-hmm. You know, like that it's not about helping the spirit. It's about getting activity.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
well, that's really what it's about. It's all about getting activity. It's like the reality shows do that. Nobody, everybody watches because they want to see something cool happen. You know, it's all about getting the activity with it. So that's the biggest part with it. And so it's like, you know, and I started asking myself, am I like working to get activity at the expense of this poor lost soul?
Yeah.
Or whatever it is like that. And that was really kind of my first revelation and what really what started to get me to move away from this stuff. And I wrote Last Call of Potomac a year later. And then a year after that was when I just hung it up for good, you know, with no regrets.
Yeah, well, no, I appreciate what you're coming, where you're coming from with this, and I really truly respect it because I don't think nearly enough people have given these entities, these beings, that consideration. It's just they think that they're there to entertain. It's, you know, and that couldn't be any further from the truth. Most of them are in pain. They're in a bad place. They're in an emotional pain and confused. And then to have people come in just continually trying to exploit that and just, you know, now entertain me so I can get this on camera and it'll be my big claim to fame. And you know, it's really, truly unfortunate, and there's unfortunately too many people that don't consider that when they go in to investigate. And, you know, hopefully your words reach a lot of people today, because I think more people need to consider that exactly that this way.
It would be nice. It would be nice to have that and also look at the whole, look at the big picture of this stuff.
Yeah.
I know we're kind of running out of time, but there's that whole part of it too, where I started to realize that it's not all disembodied spirits of dead people. There are a lot of other things. I investigated with nature spirits. I had encounters with djinn. I've had encounters with other much darker things. And in one case, something that I actually ended up doing a clearing for, which was one of the most intense cases I ever worked on. And it started out as a little girl.
Oh, sure. And it usually does.
And I thought to myself about that, how you go to like an abandoned factory, you go to an abandoned mill, a mental hospital, a prison, there's always some little girl running around.
Yeah.
You know, and really it's like, and the investigators always talk about that, oh yeah, there's a little girl that's running around here. It's like, yeah, is it going to show up as like a Lovecraftian entity with all these tentacles and five eyes and drooling teeth, or is it going to show up as a little girl?
Right.
You know, you know, of course it's not going to show up like that. It's going to show up as a little girl, you know? So you have to kind of like strip the surface of some of these things and realize that there's more to it. I think every culture has some sort of a spirit that manifests as a little girl that's a lot more sinister.
Absolutely.
The Acheri is in Mexico, for example, and the Banshee, I think, is Ireland, which is a younger version of the Banshee, which shows up as a younger female.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other ones like that across the globe.
Oh, yeah, there's a red-shirted girl in Asia. It's like the follower, they call her, or something like that, and she usually is she's a premonition of death, that she will follow somebody, and usually that person, I think that person ends up dying, if I'm remembering it right. But you're right, it always starts with these little kids or girls.
Yeah. Now you have the ones with the black eyes that are popping up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, just because they show up looking like children doesn't mean that they are.
Right.
The line with it.
No, I agree, brother. I agree. And obviously it's really clear that we've got a lot more to do. We've got a lot more conversations to have between you and I, because we haven't even dusted the table at this point, much less dug into this deeply. But I really appreciate your philosophy. I appreciate your approach. And I'm just really loving this conversation, because I really respect the amount of thought you've put into this and the amount of insight that you're bringing to the topic.
Thanks. It's been a lot. I did a lot of research, and my book has over 300 footnotes or endnotes in it, like that, about how I got the sources from everywhere that I got into, and I go over so many different parts of it. And one of the things I just want to mention is how we are at the cusp of some very big changes right now, going into the digital age. And this is all going to change drastically in our lifetime. And a lot of people aren't aware about how big this is going to change. And if You don't believe me? Just look at the demon challenges on YouTube. People going to the cemeteries at 3 a.m. with Ouija boards, streaming it, filming it. You know, these new challenges coming up, summonings, all this kind of stuff like that. It's all there.
Yeah, it really
and it's
is.
All for likes and subscriptions.
Oh God, yeah. It's so terrifying, the amount of people that have no idea what they're doing and yet they're doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that's going to be one of the biggest challenges for the modern person that's involved in this kind of stuff if they want to solve the problems going on, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. Anybody can go out and try to get activity, you know, but you have to be honest with yourself. Are you doing it because you want to help people, or are you doing it because you just want to get notoriety from it?
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know how to answer that question, honestly.
Absolutely. Now, Al, I want you to take a couple minutes and let everybody know how to both stay in touch with you and your work, and then also how to find Project Rabbit Hole and The Last Call in the Potomac books that you've written.
Sure. My book is anywhere now because it's gone through the national book distributors, but I prefer to sell it on lulu.com, which is my publishing page. Mm-hmm. And if you just go under lulu.com, and you can either type in Project Rabbit Hole or lulu.com/ATYAS, my author page will come up, and I think you linked it in the description as well. And it'll come up there because I do offer a small discount with it directly from the publisher. So you can do that. My Facebook page is Project Rabbit Hole, and you could go on Facebook and just type that in, and you can like that page. And that gets updated pretty frequently, and you can contact me through that page as a messenger on there. And people have come and they've asked me questions and things like that. And, you know, and I'm always willing to answer questions and talk to people. I just do not go on investigations. Mm-hmm. I'll never do that again. But I'm more than willing to talk to anybody about this kind of stuff with it. So it's all there. And, of course, it's on other sites, Amazon, like I said, and Barnes & Noble and those places. And if you are interested, I also do signed copies, and you can just contact me through the Project Rabbit Hole site on Facebook, and we can arrange that. Because yeah, there would be a cost with that, with shipping and that, but I'm willing to do a signed copy.
Awesome.
People like those.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. And Al, thank you so much for making the time again. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'll obviously have to do several more podcasts, and we'll have to get you on the YouTube channel as well, because I really like where you're going. I'm a new fan of your work, and I'm glad to help spread the word about it, because, you know, obviously you've done a hell of a lot of investigating and digging and research, and your work should be out there. So thank you so much, Al.
The book has arrived.
It has arrived. All right. Thanks again, Al.
Sure. Take care.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at paranormalportal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.